This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street. Do you need a conference room for your next meeting? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com.
This week on a special Valentine's Day edition of Meet in Three, we put a twist on the lovey-dovey holiday.
The mission statement is save the world through silliness and chocolate, and in parentheses, launch a chocolate bar into outer space. But I'm having some conflict in the board members with the parentheses. That's okay.
He cited that in his area there used to be 30 dairy farms and now there are 3.
You know, dessert was political, and what you had on the dessert table said more about you than other markers of success.
Tune in to Meet in 3, HRN's weekly food news and storytelling roundup wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. I was recently in Florida at the Naples Winter Wine Festival, benefiting the Naples Children and Education Foundation. I had the opportunity to sit down with the best wine people from around the world. This episode is the Bordeaux Show. I talked to Nicolas Glumineau, the winemaker and general manager at Pichon Comtesse, and Alfred Tesserone, proprietor of Chateau Pontet-Canet and now Pimray in Napa. Both of these wines are among the most sought after, critically acclaimed, and beloved wines from Bordeaux. Enjoy.
We are at the Naples Winter Wine Festival, benefiting the Naples Children and Education Foundation. Our guest is Alfred Tesserone, proprietor of Chateau Pontet-Canet in Bordeaux, and now Pimray in Napa. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Alfred.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, so at least to me, Pontet-Canet is a storied winery. Give me a quick history. Not too long, but...
No, well, Pontet-Canet is owned by my family,
right,
and my children. And my father has a great idea to buy Pontet-Canet in 1975. It's in Pauillac. It's really in a wonderful place. And it all started with the family de Pontet in 1705 with the King Louis XV. So it's not a new thing.
Right.
And I think for generation after generation, whoever were at the top of the running the chateau, they always tried the same thing, is how to do details to improve the quality. So this is in two words, and
right,
it's really a Cabernet land, but it's a mixed of Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon,
right,
mainly Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot.
Right.
And of course it's a red one, as you know, and it's a Grand Cru Classé in the 1855 classification.
Now, blend-wise, is the blend similar year to year, or it depends
on
the vintage? Yes,
it's very similar, especially in the late years where I work organic and biodynamic.
I want to talk to you about
that. And I'm certified. So it's very important because I think it helps the quality. It's to have more definition in the glass. And so I think it's a good thing.
Let's talk about this. Yes? You have said that you have liberated the vines and reconnected with nature at the winery because of embracing the organic and biodynamic methods.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
This didn't happen yesterday. When did you?
No, but it's really a sort
of. And you just mentioned you were certified.
Yes, but to do that, I have to have somebody very good to help because, in fact, what we are farmers, specialized in vineyards.
Right.
But I'm a great believer that wine is not made in a winery. It's a little bit surprising, but wine is made outside in the vineyard.
I agree.
So it's a combination of things, and once you want to improve, you know, I'm surrounded with great neighbors, first growth, so, you know, I want to improve, and it's one of the... When did we start?
Yeah.
In the 2000, we came to start to have the idea of doing something. What it was, I really don't know, but we used to start, we stopped a grass killer.
Right.
And it went by step, and little by little we got into that. We were we saw that we gave life to the soil, and when you give life to the soil, then the taste is a little bit different.
Sure.
So it's fun, and you get into that direction. And finally, in 2005, I did 100% of Planta Canet in organic and biodynamic. And then in 2006 also, and in 2007, we had a little problem.
What happened?
You know, we are in an area where it can be humid and got mildew, and it's a mushroom, nothing to do with quality, but quantity. I got scared and I went back for about a week and a half, and then immediately I said I was wrong, I shouldn't have done that, and from that on, I keep my direction.
That was a defining moment.
Oh, yeah.
That, you have to take what's thrown at you, right?
Absolutely. And really, even in 2018, I lost two-thirds of the crop. So two-thirds lost. So it really shows...
Was that typical of the region or...
No, it was...
Why with you so much?
Because when you think you know everything, we know nothing. You know,
right.
We progress in that direction, and I think it's the only way. And it's the way of the future if we, you know.
So I agree with you.
Even in 2008, I went, started to work with horses because I think it's more respectful of the
now
soil.
Now explain why. No machinery, right?
You cannot, yes, no. It's, a tractor is very heavy. Our vineyards are very narrow. So when you compact the soil... You're compacting, so you push to down, and I think it's not a good way for the soil, the life of the soil.
Right.
So when you have horses, so but it's complicated because we forgot the know-how, so we have to start to learn, and it takes a long time. Now I started with 3 horses, and now I have 11.
Wow.
And I do only a little bit over 50% of the vineyard with horses. So it's a complicated thing.
But with the objective in time, more horses, more coverage.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Where I do always things step by step. Where I put a horse, I don't go again with a tractor.
But make the commitment.
It's a commitment. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's wonderful for the life of the property, you know, of the
soil. You know, you talked about how you had to bring the property back in stages. Was it typical that after the war, everybody was just farming with pesticides and whatever it took to kill?
You know, right after the last war, the agriculture in general, we had to produce more at a lesser cost.
Right.
And it was a way.
Whatever
but,
it took to get there.
Today we're in a different life, and I think we have to totally review everything, even in my thought, raising the wine in New Oak. Of course, that's what I do. That's what I've been doing for years. But I'm making research and slowly to slow down the oak.
Do you mean by slowing down?
Well, I went 60% new oak.
Oh.
And I think there is no real reason. Maybe it's fashion. Maybe the consumer wants that little taste.
Right.
But you know, when you think of a tree, you know, it takes 200 to 400 years to grow. So, you know, we have to do things.
That's your attempt at sustainability.
Yes.
Less oak, less trees.
Yes.
You know, trees are very valuable.
Yes, but especially oak trees, you know.
Right.
They take 200 or 400 years. It's a huge amount of time.
I'm curious, because you've made such a commitment and a deep commitment, are there enough people around you in the region and even in Bordeaux that are starting to commit, or it's just not that important to some people?
Well, I think it's important to start somewhere, you know, otherwise you always say, well, look around me, and then you do nothing.
Right.
It just depends how we are all different individuals, and I think what we can do, everybody does a little thing, and little by little, it's what's happening now. It's slow, sure.
But it is happening.
Oh, yes.
Albeit little by little.
Yes.
It's encouraging.
First people start to speak about it, it's already encouraging.
Yeah.
Anything that goes in the right direction, to me, it's encouraging.
Well, I think you're a testament, because you've proven that you could make a deep commitment. Biodynamics, we're not going to explain how crazy that is, but that's a commitment.
No, but it does.
But people look at you and, the last decade or two, the quality of your wines, I mean, always, but they've just been, even more amazing.
Twice on a row, I got recognized for quality in 2009 and 2010.
That's what I'm saying. This past decade specifically.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I'm curious about is, you talked about it a little, but go into it a little more. What effect has the change to organics and biodynamics done to the wine itself? We know it's good for the environment. We know it's a commitment. But
look, even when before harvest, we walk in, around the vineyard and we taste the skin, we taste the peps, we taste the juice. Everything has a, I think it's a little bit more.
A little bit more what?
Of just everything, of definition.
It's right. It's defined more, it's livelier.
And it has a freshness. It has a purity. And this is something you cannot buy. It's just the result of years of work, be more and more precise, and what makes life, details.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I agree with you that wine is really made in the vineyard, and it's really an agricultural
product. I mean, that's my goal at Ponte Canet, no question about it.
More and more people, yes. It's always been the case, but more and more people bring it out and say, listen, wine's made. But how do you carry your practices into the cellar? I mean, you're practicing organics, biodynamics.
No, when it's bottle is bottle. The bottle will age nicely in the cellar.
But are you low intervention? I mean, you're not doing much with the wine in the cellar, are you?
No. It's just
a minimalist approach.
Well, we can, but right. Sulfur. Everybody's working to find what is the best. But wines without sulfur, they die, and I think it's not wine anymore.
And Bordeaux typically is so popular around the world, it gets shipped.
No, but we age, we can, a good bottle, a great vintage, you never know when it's going to be drunk. When it's good at the beginning, it's always wonderful, and it gets better throughout the time. But, wine is made to have friends. You open a good bottle of wine at your home.
Well, that's
when things are difficult.
That's the beauty of
and
wine.
And you have, it's magic.
Right.
Great wines bring people together.
I agree with that. You said something, and this is sort of a silly question, but I'm curious. Are there times when you make a wine and you don't love it at the beginning and it does get better in the bottle? Because you said if you make a good wine, it's going to get better, and, you share it with people. Do okay wines get better, or that worries you?
I'm to the level where I don't make... I am only thinking for great wine. That's my goal. And
makes sense.
You are a father of children, or you can understand, you do everything you can for your children. Of course, sometimes there are little details that we miss. We are not perfect.
Right.
But we realize, and the next year, the only problem we have, we make only one wine per year. So every time we learn, it's for the following year.
That's right. It's an ongoing process.
That's why I have gray hair. So I'm doing better. I'm getting
there.
We
all get gray hair when we get older. Maybe you got a little earlier. You know, you talked about you're using less and less oak, but you didn't tell me what you're doing. I mean, I think I read you're shifting to amphorae. I mean, are you vessels?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, because we have to raise the baby, you know,
right.
And needs a... So we design amphora, but they are made of concrete. And to give a little link between...
When you say they're made in concrete, typically they're clay, right?
Yes, but clay is sponges. And,
right.
And
you want less
yes,
porous.
And want neutral, right. But I am interested also... the exchange with outside, like a cask. And we made some research, and we finally arrived to the equivalent of 4 casks in 1 amphora. But when we made the concrete, we put some, to link with the outside, we put some soil of Ponte Cane, some stones.
And explain so that like, to me. Well, it's inside.
Yeah.
What does that do? I know it's a connection, emotionally.
Yeah, it makes everybody smile.
Okay.
But
it's an emotional.
No, because when it arrives to the result, you put 2 glasses, one with made with also the stone of Ponte Cane, and the other one there is a little touch,
can.
You know, do with some good friends who are good tasters. There is something. It's magic.
Yeah, that's interesting. The region is, how do you pronounce it?
Pauillac, yes.
Why is that a great place to make wine? We know some of the great wines come out of there.
I think we have a soil, subsoil. We have an estuary. We have the Atlantic, and we have people. So it's a combination
the
of
conversion
things.
Of all those
and
things.
And years after years, people look in that parcel, in that block, is it good for this type of vine or another? And they've been searching, and now I think it's the result of many years of good thinking.
Yeah.
And this is why... a glass of Ponte Cane is so magical.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of the reasons. I mean, you know, it's not one thing. It's just combination.
You've been celebrating some great vintages and great, you know, critical acclaim. That's a testament to what you just said. You have something new going on in your life. And it's funny, you take an old French guy out of Bordeaux, and where do you think he's going to go? Tell me about your new project. It's called Pimray.
Pimray, absolutely.
Okay.
But it's a sort, you know, first, remember that we are a cognac family.
Right.
And my father had a wonderful idea to cross the estuary of the Gironde. And when you run a family business, you try to invest for the future. And where do we go? Where do, you know... my father, cognac, I made a brand out of it called Tesseron Cognac and specialize in old cognac under the lot number. And it's very high quality, it's small quantities, but quality is it's very interesting. And Pauillac after, and at my generation, you know, I try to bring the quality of Ponte Cane, of course, one thing, but I thought, where can we invest? And I look in different countries. I was very lucky when I was a young, starting in life. United States gave me my first job.
Where and what was it?
Oh, I was I was a trainee for 6 months, supposedly, and I finally spent almost 6 years.
Wow.
So it shows I love your country.
Yeah.
And... when it was time to invest, I thought United States is a good country because you have Napa and where you grow very good Cabernets. And I think we understand the Cabernet Sauvignon, we understand the Cabernet Franc, and we understand the Merlot. So I told Jean-Michel, my right hand at Ponte Cane, let's look in Napa where we can make a wine that I will enjoy. You know, I have my taste bud.
Right.
You know, it took us 4 years to really know where we will be, if we be.
So you looked because, at multiple properties, appellations,
yeah, and really,
you know, AVAs.
Jean-Michel always came at the same time of the year, before harvest, to taste the skin and to see what it will give.
Right.
And finally, he arrived and said, really, Montvida, for us, for what we want to do. It's our own taste. Huh? It's the place for us. And we looked at a great estate. It was not what we wanted because it was too huge. But it had something very interesting. It's a parcel in the block of vines was planted 30 years at that time by Robin Williams.
And Robin Williams, the actor.
Yes, and yeah, the actor. And he sold the grapes to different wineries. So never a wine was made there. But what the interest for us, it on the soil, it has limestone, it has clay in a volcanic soil. And this will give depth to a wine. So this, plus the age of the vines, plus the Cabernets and the Merlot, we thought it's perfect for us. So it took us a while to acquire this vineyard, but it had things were wrong for us. It's a huge estate. I didn't want that. And
the property, you mean?
Yes, the ranch itself.
Right. When you talked about the grapes, the 30 it's, plus your vines, is, how much was or is planted?
Only 18. Acres.
Is that what you're working with?
Yeah,
are
that's
you
what we,
replanting,
no,
or you like
no,
what you
no,
have?
No.
Are you well, adding?
I love what I have, yeah, and okay. And first I have to succeed. You know, the name Pimray is not known. It's the way Robin Williams planted the vines, and it made from his children's middle name.
It's, right.
And so we kept, you know, in my country, we don't change a soil name. It brings bad luck. I'm also a sailor.
You
and
honor.
On boat, yeah.
You are, right.
But also we don't, you know, on a boat, you don't change.
You don't,
change
right. You don't want to screw around. Yes. Leave it the way it is.
Yeah. I want good luck. I don't try to. Inside of the house, it has a great globe, and this became the symbol of the label. So it's really a great venture.
So you're into your second vintage?
No, time goes, you know. My first vintage was 16.
16, okay.
And 16, I went immediately dry farming. And dedicated to dry farming, we even took all the system out to make sure we don't we're not tempted one day. You know, we have some.
So you're dry farming. You're up in the mountain
in
a
the
little.
Mountains,
you have very intense grapes, I would think.
Not many grapes, but they are of what we like.
Right.
And I went also organic, and we went biodynamic, and now we are certified with Demeter. So it's already...
You carried the practices there from the beginning.
Yes.
And
yes.
Quickly.
Yes, I mean, and we brought, you know, extremely small tanks. Imagine 18 acres with 40 tanks.
Wow.
For fermentation only, and it's really so like this. Immediately year one, we know exactly who's what, who's doing what kind of.
So 16 was the first vintage.
16, yes.
17's in the bottle.
16 is in the bottle. 17 in the bottle. Yes, absolutely.
18 and still.
And even now, this week, last week, I was with my son Noé. He was in the middle of the United States. My daughter was on the East Coast, and I was on the West Coast, launching Pimray for the country of origin, United States. So
right.
Something that didn't exist from day one to day two. We have very happy because people respond very well to our work. And
rightfully so. The blend of the wine... Is it similar?
No,
to
it's
the
more.
Departed and you wanted to do something.
No,
it's
different. The way it was planted, and it works perfectly with the soil. It's mainly Cabernet Sauvignon, where we have, I think, 75% Cabernet Sauvignon. We have a little bit of Cabernet Franc, about 4%, and the rest is Merlot.
And that's all grown, that's all estate grapes.
Oh, yeah, right. Of course.
Right. Now, do you have a winemaking facility on the property?
No, we have plans, but it's complicated, but we will succeed. It's a question of time.
Why is it so complicated? Permits and all that stuff, or just the construction?
Everything. Because we are on the mountains and we don't, you know, we have to respect the laws. But even for us, farming is complicated because we're not allowed to plow. And one day we bought Angus cows. We put them in the ranch to clean, you know, they are like lawn machines.
Right.
And
right
after we bought the place, and one day we find them in the wintertime, it was pouring rain, we find them in the vineyard. How did they get there, we don't know, but the result, with their feet and the soil, they made little holes, and it's like, it's ideal. And
so you stumbled on something that works well.
Very well.
And benefits the product.
And also, the big problem in the mountains is the water runs and carry everything, and those little holes stop the water and keep the soil. So it's wonderful.
How much wine are you making?
Nothing to speak of.
Right.
In
where is the best place? Will it be in restaurants?
Restaurants and
is there a mailing list?
And no. And good stores.
I will probably. Okay.
Do mailing lists in time, but that's not my... Right.
It's a limited production one.
Oh, very limited.
But it's out there in some
For places. United States, imagine 10,000 bottles, what is it? Not much.
No.
But...
But if you split it amongst the five biggest cities...
But the wine has to be perfect.
So that's Pimray. That's Pymrae. And like Alfred said, those were Robin Williams' kids' middle names.
Yes.
And to honor the whole process, you kept the name of the winery, which is his kids' middle names. Alfred, we have to wrap up. I wish you continued success. Good luck with Pimray. It sounds like you're off and running. Ponte, you know, it just seems like it keeps getting better. Kudos to you for the organics and the biodynamics. I hope, you know, you are an example and a beacon that other people will follow. Thank you to Alfred Tesserone. Alfred is the proprietor of Ponte Canet in Bordeaux and now Pimray in Napa. I'm Sam Ben Rubin. You've been listening to The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people.
This episode was brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with meeting and event spaces available for on-demand booking. Looking for the next perfect outdoor location for your next gathering? Host your next event at 100 Bogart's impressive rooftop, just steps away from the Morgan L Stop. It's one of the largest and tallest roof spaces in Bushwick, boasting 360-degree views of Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens. 100 Bogart's rooftop is available for your next networking event, fundraiser, special performance, or photo shoot. There's approximately 5,000 square feet, ample space for up to 100 guests. For more information on hosting an event at 100 Bogart's rooftop, email info@100bogart.com or call 718-362-3539.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey on the Heritage Radio Network. We are at the Naples Winter Wine Festival, benefiting the Naples Children and Education Foundation. Our guest is Nicolas Glumino.
winemaker at Chateau, and help me with this because there's all different names. Chateau Pichon Longueville Comtesse de Lalande.
Perfect.
Is that the official name?
Yeah. Well, that's why we used to say Pichon Comtesse. Okay. To make it a bit short.
Okay.
But officially it's the whole name.
Okay, and title? You are
General Manager and winemaker.
And winemaker.
Yeah.
Okay. Nikolai, welcome to the great nation.
Thank you.
I was excited to see that you were down here because we come down and we do a bunch of interviews, and there haven't been a lot of Bordeaux people down here in the past, so it was nice to see that you came down. So what I want you to do is I want you to give the listeners a little context. Give me a brief history of the Chateau. It's a very storied Chateau, very well known, you know, making terrific wines for many years. Give me a little background on your journey in life and wine, how you got there, and also a little history.
Okay. So, hi, Sam. Thank you for having me. Talking about the history of Pichon is talking about the history of Bordeaux, so it can be very long. So I'm going to try not to annoy you too much.
You will never annoy me.
Actually, we think that the first vines planted in the neighborhood of the chateau were planted in a middle age, something like this. But at that time, no official label, just I don't even know if people made some wine with the grapes. But probably they did, but it was for a very domestic, very personal consumption. But anyway, we have to reach the mid-17th century to see a wine merchant of Bordeaux discovering this piece of land near the river,
the
Gironde, composed by big gravel, and this guy understood quickly that it was a perfect place to plant some vine, to make some wine. And in our neighborhood, we have Chateau Latour, Léoville-Lascaz, so the Pichon Longueville is located on the stamp on the map, but where conditions are fantastic to make wine and to grow vine.
Now that is the Pauillac. Did I pronounce it?
Pauillac
region.
Yeah, exactly.
You're alluding to the wonderfulness of that area, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is the south of Pauillac and north of Saint-Julien. From Bordeaux to the ocean on the left bank of the river, you have four main appellations, which are from south to north, Margaux, Saint-Julien, Pauillac, and Saint-Estèphe. And actually, the more north you drive, and the more gravelly, dry, and draining of the soil. So potentially, the more tannic and powerful are the wines, because on that kind of soils, you have a lot of cab planted there. Why? Very briefly, because our job as vine growers is to help the vine to stop growing in the middle of the season, to help it to concentrate its efforts on the maturation of fruits. And Cabernet Sauvignon is a very late varietal, meaning that it ripes much later than Merlot. And so because we have dry and draining soils,
Give me a context. Are you talking about harvesting a week, two, 3 weeks later?
Oh, it's...
It could be that long?
2 weeks later.
Okay.
Yeah, for instance, thinking of those recent years, we have started the harvest, let's say, mid-September. With the Merlot during 1 week to 10 days. Then we have the Cabernet Franc during 1 to 2 days. And then we can wait a few more days before the caps are perfectly ripe. So, and then we start picking them until mid-October. Mm. So our harvest lasts something like, almost 1 month. And caps off need to be planted on a very dry and draining soil because the drier is the soil, and the more rapidly the roots gonna drink all the water stock around them. And once the vine has no water to drink, it stops growing. And then it's this very signal to tell to the plant, okay, now let's focus on the fruit maturation. And instead of ripening in late October, early November, because the soils are very draining, the water stock reach an end and is empty very early in the season, and so the cat anticipate its ripening moment.
Does it struggle even a little?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which
we are used
the complexity
to
complexity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So through the struggling, you get the complexity of the wine, the very earthy expression of terroir. That's kind of
clear one thing up for me. You said as you move north, more gravelly, more drainage.
Yes.
But you said that leads to more tannic wines?
Yeah, potentially. If you have a look on the wines made in Saint-Estèphe, right, north of the left bank, think of Chateau Montrose or Cos d'Estournel, the wines are potentially richer and more powerful than anywhere in Bordeaux. And in Pauillac, you have many examples of very powerful wines.
Right.
And the very specificity of our vineyards at Pichon-Contesse is that we are located on the border, if I may say, on the border between Saint-Julien south and Pauillac north. I have this feeling that it gives to our wine this complexity. We're used to say that Pichon-Contesse is the more feminine or the more Saint-Julien style wine produced in Pauillac. It's not by chance. It's not
right.
by chance.
It's the terroir. And,
exactly.
You know, all of that. Let's talk about the wines. You know, you talked a little about the soils, the area, how important it is. If we talk about Pichon Lalande, I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I've drank it a lot of times. It's a voluptuous, fleshy, it's a feminine wine. You're not offended by the fact that it's a feminine wine, are you?
No, I'm not.
So
I'm not.
Tell me about the blending, the aging. You know, tell me about, I guess, you know, the cellar process and all of that.
You know, it's a very good question to make the relationship between history and the technical reality of our all-day job. I mean, okay, Pichon-Contesse has had the bigger amount of Merlot in Pauillac compared to the other wineries. So that has always been mainly Cab, but the proportion of Merlot has been always very high until reaching 40 to 45% of the grape in the vineyard. So that's a lot. Think of our neighbors, they don't have more than 20% of Merlot, so
yeah.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And that's probably because in the past, the former owners really enjoyed the Merlot taste and they planted a lot. At that point, you have to add the fact that many ladies have run this winery. The former owner, the very former owner, is a lady, Madame de Lancassin. She now lives in South Africa. And she's the lady who sold the winery in 2006 to the Rousseau family, the Louis Roederer Champagne House. She is a lady as well. So you can consider a lot of Merlot, a lady running the winery. It's La Comtesse compared to Le Baron, so it's a it's a feminine name.
Everything points.
Everything.
Right,
the marketing was absolutely obvious. It's all about the feminine approach of
right.
wine.
In every sense.
Exactly. And what is funny, and 2 points. When the Rousseau bought the winery 14 years ago now, they first asked for a geological map of the vineyard, a soil and undersoil map of it. It has never been done.
A little analysis, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, they are winemakers and vine growers from generation to generation, back to basics. And that was very interesting, first, to know that we could not take the benefit of a map, so we had to do it. It took a few years because you have to grab many holes in every and to dig in every plot. We have
right.
something like 80 something
vary.
Plots. So it's a lot of work and it takes time before drawing this map. But just the idea was to say, okay, the reputation of a growth is what it is, but is it the truth compared to what we call le terroir? Are the amounts of each grapes really adapted to the soil and undersoil of each plot? That was the question. So time to draw this map and to try to pair the grapes proportions and the new map. And just to have a look and to say, oh my God, but there are a few plots on which we shouldn't have planted some Merlot, but more Cab, that's for sure. The Merlot were good, but Cab will be fantastic.
Right, you did it just because you did it, not because it was...
Exactly. And as for me, when I jumped to Pichon Comtesse late 2012...
For context, Roederer came in and bought it what year?
In late 2006.
Right, and you came in...
6 years later.
Right, so you worked... you know, with them, and all this was starting to go on.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It sounds like you're going to point towards the fact that a little less Merlot now.
Yeah, exactly. And
based on science and analysis.
Exactly. But, you know, back to the past and the history of Pichon, day two or three when I jumped Pichon, I asked the cellar master to open a vertical tasting to me, for me. And I was expecting him to open, I don't know, 10 or 12 different vintages, only the best ones, you know. And the funny thing that one morning I arrived at the chateau, he said, okay, the vertical tasting is ready for you. And he opened 1970, 2010, each single vintage. So 41 different vintages.
Oh, whole vertical.
Vertical.
Oh my God.
And that was so interesting. First, because when you're passionate into wine, it's such an exercise. So it was a long day, a tough day, but it was a good day.
I'll take it any day.
Something like it took 5 hours before taking time to rediscover each vintage, to take notes and so on, and to figure out.
What was your biggest takeaway from that? I mean, were there things that were so obvious and things that prompted you to push toward change?
Yeah, the best ones, to me, to my taste, the best Pichon Comtesse are much more Pauillac style than Margaux or Saint-Julien or a very light style at all. They are very Pauillac style and caps off. They're all about the expression of Cabernet Sauvignon. I think of the 80s, 82, 83, 89, 96, for sure. 2009, they are all more than 75 or 80% Cab, despite of the reputation of the growth. The greatest Pichon Comtesse are much more Cab than Merlot, even if the Merlot are good.
Right.
So the communication is something, and the truth is sometimes a bit different. And I think that today we have a replanting program. So we pull out 3 hectares out of 90. We pull out 3 hectares of vine every year. We let the soils having a rest during 3 years, and then we replant.
So you don't replant right away?
No.
When you pull out, are you pulling Merlot and replacing Cabernet, or not necessarily? You're just...
Well, we pull out the vines when they are very old.
Right.
You know,
you're doing that anyway.
Yeah. But I must say that it's mostly Merlot that is
being replaced.
Yes, exactly, okay. By Capsov. And the idea is to have finally something like 20 to 25% of Merlot in the vineyard, 65 to 70% Capsov, and the rest 10 more percent of Cap Franc and a sip of Petit Verdot. Yeah.
Now that's the percentage of what you're planting in the vineyards, right?
Yes.
Does that follow through to the blend?
Absolutely.
It's pretty close.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And it's not by chance. When you have a look on the blend of the best vintages made by Pichon Comtesse, and that you have a look on what will be the amounts of each grape in the future, based on scientific knowledges, that they are very close to each other.
Right.
So. I think we are, it's just the beginning. It's
I'm curious because, you know, you make one of the wines that's so well known and, you know, you have a large following for many years, young, old. When you start changing the wine, Do people push back? Do you hear from them? This isn't the wine that I had five vintages ago, or, you know, why is this wine more masculine? I don't know what the word is, but
yeah.
Do you get a lot of that, or it was an evolution? And
so I think that the very reflection we have, the challenge we have to deal with, and that is not obvious to deal with, is making our wines evolving, the proportions evolving, but keeping what makes Pichon Comtesse unique. And being inspired by the past to write a new chapter.
Right, you didn't change anything. You just went back to what it really was, or at least the area.
Exactly. And if I have a look on what the critics or our amateurs, which are very loyal to the brand, say about the series of 2014, 15, and above all 16, 17, 18, believe me, they have this feeling that they are still at Pichon Comtesse. But it's the evolution is remarkable. They have something on top. They have something that they can't express because it's still Pichon Comtesse, but they have more density and sharpness than in the past. I'm not about to say that it was not that well made in the past. It's just that
things evolved. No, it's a different thing.
It's different.
Wine.
Yeah, yeah.
A different blend and all.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's always Pichon Comtesse.
Right. Now, like any big, good winery, you make a second and third wine. Does that philosophy carry through to those, or you could keep more Merlot in some of the, I mean, similar?
Yeah, it's similar. We have 80 plus plots. I'm used to tell to my technical team, let's do as if someday we make 100% of the premium wine, you know. Obviously, we won't, because you have sometimes one or a few plots don't adapt themselves to the weather conditions and so on. So the wine is not that complete, and so we do a selection. But we vinify each plot separately, and then the blending sessions that we run in right now, in January and February following the harvest, the first sessions, we run them blind. I don't want to know where the wines come from. This plot, okay, maybe it's a historical, very good plot, but what about this year? What about 19, which was such an enlightened and dry vintage?
But
very
good,
dry.
Or tough?
Oh, it's
great.
Just outstanding.
So look out for 19.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure.
I mean, 16 was good, 17 was okay.
Yeah, and 18 and 19 are on top.
So
yeah,
you had
yeah.
a pretty good run.
I think that as we've made the comparison between 2009 and 10, we're going to have exactly the same kind of comparison between 18 and 19. 18 is like 09, very voluptuous, very thick.
And
expressive and show off. And and 10 and 19, to the contrary, are very sharp and very are all about the minerality, the tannic structure, very long, very intention. That's fantastic. That's much more my style, I would say.
It sounds good. You were saying before that you blind taste the plots.
Yes.
Individually.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it what people imagine? You're in a room with beakers or vessels with each thing, and you're
that's
tasting
exactly.
everything, and then you start blending?
You know, you have a table with the 70 to 80 different bottles.
And, Jesus.
Okay, and you taste all of them, starting with the Merlot, selecting the best ones, then the caps off.
Selecting the best ones blind.
Yes. Yeah, of course. And then the caps off the same, a few cap franc, and then we have the press wines. So the tasting of press wines, to me, is a fantastic moment. You have something like 250 different barrels of press wines, and you taste each of them. Each of them, selecting the quality A, B, C, D, E. And to me, this is the press wine is the emerged part of the iceberg, you know. It's
tip of the iceberg.
Oh yeah, exactly.
There's way more to come.
Exactly, right. And it's all about the good job done through the in the vineyard. How ripe were the grapes when we pick them, and it's all about the expression of how you extracted the components of, through the vinification process. If the press wines are good, that means you have well, you have worked well. For me, it's right. It's a crucial tasting. And so, yeah, back to your question. It's you have dozens and dozens of bottles, and then you select,
and then you start blending.
Blending, exactly. And once you,
and you're surprised every now and then, like a blind beaker container is like you thought it was something else, and it's a wow, it
exactly.
showed this year like never before.
Exactly. The blending session is the very moment of the year when there is part of creation in our job. It's all about agriculture, empirism, scientific knowledges, but sometimes there is part of, no, I shouldn't say art, because it's not that humble, but you are creating something new every year. But keeping in mind that you work for Pichon Comtesse.
Right.
So it's many components
to
hold together.
I hate to use the word style, but there's, you know, you have to be what you are and were and all of that.
But what is for sure is that when you really want to serve your terroir, this terroir and its expression is stronger than yourself. So you do your best to try to help it to reveal itself, but finally, that's why year after year, it's Pichon Comtesse. Because the footprint of the terroir on the taste, on the structure of the wine is so huge that it's useless to try to be better or more powerful than it. That's for sure.
We only have a couple of minutes left. I told you it was going to go fast.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about how important sustainability is and some of your practices, you know, in the field and what you're doing and if you're moving towards.
Okay, so I think that there are some very good organic wines, some very bad ones. There are some very good wines made in biodynamics, some bad ones. I mean, it's not because it's organic or bio
right.
that it has to be good. But what is for sure is that those new practicals help us to be back to earth, back in the vineyard. And giving...
That's important.
Yes, that's important.
We must go in that direction.
Yes, yes, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know if the global climate change, it's not only the global warming, it's climate change.
I was just going to say, I now use the term climate change.
Yeah.
Because it is not just global warming.
Exactly.
Some places are cyclical.
Is it a cycle? How long will it last? I just don't know. Is it because of our practices? I just don't know. But we have to adapt ourselves. And let's take the benefit of this changing to think about our practicals. And it's fair to try to do better. What is for sure is that thanks to our replanting program I've described, the 3 hectares we replant every year, we grow the vine immediately in biodynamics. So that means that I enlarge the size of the vineyard in biodynamics of 3 more hectares every year.
So the replanting and the addition comes back as biodynamic.
Exactly.
So then it's a plan that as it goes out becomes more...
The point was that if you try to convert a vine grown in sustainable to biodynamics just in 1 year, it's going to take years before trying to observe a changing in the how the vine... its behavior and so on. And I wouldn't conclude that it doesn't work just because I can't see anything. So that's why I prefer growing the new vines from the very start. And then the vine evolves in such an environment that it's new life. It's not a new life, it's life.
Right.
Is under biodynamics. And for us, 3 more hectares every year allows us to take time to try to understand, to educate ourselves, to notice, to observe changings, to run experimentations. And year after year, we learn a lot. So that's a good experience
direction.
And experiment.
I'm glad to hear that. Nicolas, we have to wrap up. I want to thank Nicolas Gluminot. Nicolas is the winemaker and general manager at Chateau Pichon Comtesse.
Yeah.
That way too. Thank you for joining us on the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network at the Naples Winter Wine Festival. I hope to see you when I'm in France.
Yeah, yeah, doors are open. Okay. Please let me know.
Thank you for coming by and sitting
Thank
with
you,
us.
Sam. Thank you.
The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.